We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 95. Scott, unfortunately, I think this is the episode where we bury the 2016 Yankees. Losing 6 out of 7 at this point in the season is probably not going to get it done, which means I think their playoff hopes, all of those dreams, which was a pipe dream for a while, but I think people were starting to get on the bandwagon, it might officially be dead.
Maybe. Maybe
still
not.
Still going to go with maybe?
Maybe. This team has been written off before. They went on, 7-game streak, then they lost 6 of 7. So who's to say a 7-game streak isn't on the around the corner? And the one thing that gives me hope, I guess, is the fact that everybody else in this race is not very good either.
I don't know. And, the Mariners won 8 games in a row.
Yeah, which means they're going to lose. They're going to go on a losing streak at some point soon. It's not going to last. They're not going to. I feel like they did that eight game winning streak a little too early, just like we did.
Robbie Cano. If they make the playoffs, Robbie Cano is going to be your AL MVP.
That's disgusting.
Guess that contract ain't so bad after all.
Yeah. Well, now is not the bad time. We all know that. Now is not the bad time. Now is everybody should be happy and in love with Robbie Cano at this point in Seattle. It's the later. You know, 2 to 3 years that are going to be just dreadful.
Even though you say the words, maybe, that they're still in the playoff hunt, I don't believe it. I hear nothing behind your voice that has any sincerity or any belief that you think the Yankees could still make the playoffs. I think you are finally defeated. They have knocked you down enough. These gut-wrenching losses over the last 5-6 days have been enough to completely kill your positive spirits.
Yeah, see, that's where you're wrong. See, the fact is, and I've been watching, and you and I have been, we haven't talked directly, I think, since a few days since that brutal loss on Thursday night. But I've seen some of your comments, I've seen some of your tweets, and I know where your head's at. I don't think you know where mine is, though. This, in the sense, only because I never really got all the way back up, because I was never all the way back down either. I've always been kind of steady Eddie along this thing, and. While I was hopeful that there was an opportunity, I wasn't going to allow myself to be disappointed if they didn't get to that point. And that's still where I am. I still think that this is great. This is great for the kids. They're learning. They're playing some very valuable innings in big moments. They hit a big winning streak. Now they've gotten knocked down. Let's see if they can get back up and see if they can rattle off a few more and make it interesting again. Never know.
Okay, smash
that's where
mouth.
I am.
I get knocked down,
actually,
but I get up
okay.
again.
Yeah, that's it. Listen, a beautiful 90s song.
I agree with you that in the long term, this will be positive for all the young kids, the ones that are still playing and the ones I know Judge is now injured. We're going to get to that in a second. Yes, you're probably right that in the long term, playing well in August and September is only going to be a positive thing. That does not change the fact that those losses, specifically Wednesday afternoon and Thursday night in Fenway, were two of the more heartbreaking losses that this team has had in the last few years. And it's because I got so invested in this team after the trade deadline. All of those kids sucked me back in, and I fell back in love with that team. I didn't give a crap about the Carlos Beltran and the Mark Teixeira and the Brian McCann Yankees. I cared about the Gary Sanchez and the Starlin Castro, Didi Gregorius, and all the young kids Yankees. That was a fun team that we were watching in August and the first half of September. So when they go out and they absolutely rip my guts out on Thursday night, it's going to hurt. So even though I acknowledge the fact that that might help them in the long term, that doesn't change the fact that I was literally devastated after that loss on Thursday.
Yeah, but some of the comments are directly at them. Like, I feel like your feelings are directly at them. Like, you're angry at them because they got you back in.
Yes.
They got you back in. You're angry at them because the kids played well. So let's backtrack. We went to the trade deadline. The trade deadline happened. We sold everybody, right? Beautiful. This is exactly what we wanted. They did everything we wanted. The management cooperated. The players cooperated. Freaking A-Rod cooperated and left town. Then all of a sudden the kids are playing and we're like, okay, well now there's a possibility that these kids will, you know, they'll play well. Who knows? Probably not, but maybe. And then all of a sudden these kids are playing out of their minds. a positive thing, right? Like a very positive thing, one that was not expected, out of their minds, and got back into this race somehow, some way. They were done, buried, everybody had them gone. And then these kids played out of their freaking minds and got back in the race. And then what happened? I guess the inexperience showed, the immaturity showed, the fact that they're playing longer than they've probably ever played in their entire lives has showed. All these things have culminated into this losing 6 of 7. They ran into some good teams at a bad time. And the fact that you could be angry at those kids who got so, you know, so much good experience and actually delivered to get your hopes up, to me makes no sense.
No.
It just doesn't make any sense.
You're kind of wrong. You're partially right. You're partially
wrong. No, I'm very right. I'm all right.
At myself for allowing them to suck me back in. I should have just treated it like you treated it, where it's all gravy. It's all house money. And whatever the kids do is great. And I understand that they're probably not going to get it done in the long run. I got sucked back in, though, and I truly believed that this team could make the playoffs. And I
blame
shame
yourself.
On myself. Yes, shame on myself for allowing that to happen.
Okay, well, that's better. that makes it a lot better.
But I'm also
that makes
pissed
it a lot better. The fact
that it's
a personal issue.
I'm pissed at them because they ripped my guts out.
See, there it is again. There it is again. Here's the undertone.
I'm pissed at them. I'm pissed at myself. It's a 50-50.
You should
split.
Only no. You should only be angry
street.
At yourself. You
Rooting
did this to yourself.
Rooting for the Yankees is a two-way street.
No, it's not. You did it to yourself. The fact that they got back into this race, if they pulled something off, it would have been a freaking. Like one for the ages if they had gotten in the playoffs.
Miracle, I understand.
One
that.
For the ages.
Yeah. It would
have
been great.
So that's something you can't get disappointed. I'm like, holy crap, I can't believe they are actually in this position to make me feel this way. That is awesome.
No,
that is something I didn't expect.
I could still get upset when it doesn't happen because I am emotionally
invested. It just depends on where you're directing your anger.
I'm emotionally invested.
It depends on where you're directing your anger.
So you're telling me that last year Mets fans were okay with losing the World Series because they were lucky to be in that place in the first place?
No,
it's
a totally different scenario.
It's not a totally
a very different scenario.
I understand the stakes are higher being in the World Series, but no one expected them to make the World Series. When they traded for Yoenis Cespedes at the trade deadline, they were lucky to make the damn playoffs. And they went on an epic run. They steamrolled in the playoffs, and they made the World Series. And then they had their freaking guts ripped out in 5 games, and they were devastated.
The
I know
Mets
it's
did
higher
not
stakes,
trade
but
their entire team at the trade deadline. Then all of a sudden, these you know four pitchers came up and came out of the blue.
The Mets were a mediocre
That's not what
500 team.
It's a very different scenario.
For 81 and 81. It's not that dissimilar. All I'm trying to tell you is, even if you have low expectations, the team can bring you up to high expectations, and you are fully invested again. And that can happen. That's
oh,
what
no
happened
doubt.
With a lot of people.
I was fully invested as well. But the point is that I'm not going to overreact to when they actually don't do well. I knew that that was around the corner.
So it didn't
I knew that
upset
the
you're telling me Wednesday
I knew
Thursday
that the potential of that
you.
Was around the corner. No, are you kidding me? Thursday night was gut wrenching.
Right.
It was horrible.
Right.
It was horrible.
So how are you not mad? How are you not upset about Thursday night? I don't get it.
I was upset.
I don't get how you can wake up the next morning and say, oh, you know what? Who cares? It's just house money anyway.
That's not the point. The point is I'm not mad at these kids for sucking me back in
literally
and then
mad
dropping
the
my heart. It's not. That's not the way it went at all.
I'm not literally
not,
mad
not
at
even
the
remotely.
Kids. Not mad at Gary Sanchez. I'm not mad at Luis Severo. I'm not mad at the kids. Literally.
I mean, obviously not Gary Sanchez. He's been ridiculous.
I'm mad overall at the Yankees for sucking me back in, and also I'm
no,
mad at
you
myself.
Already admitted that's you, not them.
It's both.
No, it's you. It's all you. All
right, we're getting really down a rat hole here. Before we do that, because we're not done talking about Thursday night, because honestly, that was one of the worst losses regular season of my lifetime. Before we get to
the
that,
way it
though,
went down, it was just absolutely gut wrenching.
We're gonna get to it
because of the lead.
Yeah,
because of the lead and what happened, you know, with the decisions. I mean, there's just so many things to talk about that night. But yeah,
we're gonna talk about them all. Before we do that, though, last week we did not dedicate an episode because you and I could not find anything for number 94. We've got something for number 95, though. And if anyone has something for 96 for next week, please tweet us at Yankees Podcast. We will be sure to give you a shout-out for your Twitter handle, and we'll use the stat or fact or whatever it may be. Here's number 95. Aaron Judge is done for the season, unfortunately, with an oblique injury. He suffered it Tuesday night on a gigantic swing, and you could see him grimacing right after the swing. So he ends the year with 95 plate appearances, and his final numbers are not good. 179 batting average, 263 on base percentage, and then a 345 slugging with 3 home runs, 42 strikeouts, pretty much struck out half of his at-bats 50% of the time. It's insane. Kind of want to talk about the positives and negatives looking at Aaron Judge's four weeks, whatever it was in the majors, pretty much 4 weeks, right? Positives for me that stood out, even though his batting average is 179, to have a 263 on base percentage is actually pretty decent. It shows that he's got a decent eye at the plate. And if he can get that batting average up to even 250, you got a 350 on base percentage is pretty good in today's game. He has big power. I mean, two of the three home runs that he hit were over 440 feet, so mammoth home runs. We knew that, and I was honestly pretty impressed with the play he had in the field, in right field.
Yeah, I think the biggest positive for me was the mental makeup. It seemed like he never really got too far down with his struggles, because he was struggling very badly. I mean, you mentioned the 42 Ks. That's a number that absolutely the ratio needs to decrease by substantially, for him to succeed in this league, and probably has to do it, in the first half of next year, for him to stick in right field for the entire year, at least with the regular at bats. This is a guy that we know has a long swing. He shortened it when he got to AAA because he was struggling also with the strikeout. But like you said, he's got a good eye. The problem is that he just can't hit that breaking ball, and he really needs to work on, his approach with the breaking ball, I think. And I think you had talked about this earlier. You had mentioned something, a key on him. One of the things that he started doing was doubting himself and taking too many pitches. And definitely, I think you're absolutely right in the fact that he needs to start pouncing on these fastballs. He needs to look for fastballs. And if he gets something, if there's a mistake, he needs to jump on it. And that's where he's going to make a living.
Yeah, I actually put that as one of my negatives, was that he wasn't aggressive enough early in the counts. If he's on a 0-0 count or a 1-0 count and he gets a fastball in the middle of the plate, don't take it. Hit it. Pummel it.
Right.
I mean, he's not there to walk. He's there to hit the ball 400 feet. So I think that's absolutely something he needs to work on. And then he won't even get to the breaking ball. He's never going to be a hitter that is not going to strike out a lot. He's going to strike out. That's what happens when you're 6'7". The strike zone is gigantic. It's hard for him to cover the lower half, outer part of the plate. That's always going to be the case. But if he can run into 30 home runs, he's a valuable player. He looked timid at times, but you said about his makeup, and I think Andrew Marchand, who writes for ESPN, wrote something this week about how Judge kind of showed leadership in the clubhouse, and as soon as he came up, he kind of had a calming presence in the locker room. He took over the music duties from Aaron Hicks. He called him DJ Judge. So a dude coming up rookie year, and he's kind of making a name for himself in the clubhouse. Some of the veterans, Headley and McCann, both talked about him in high regard, said that he is very confident, but not in a cocky way. It's more of like a calming influence on the locker room, which is good. And they kind of compared it to how the clubhouse is more fun and relaxed than it was versus when Beltran and A-Rod and Jeter and all those guys were there.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense, only just because I think when you have a bunch of young guys, it's a more engaging and fun atmosphere. I mean, all these guys are there for the first time, so they're experiencing a lot of these things together for the first time. So I think that just kind of breeds, positivity and just, that exuberance that we've talked about. The fact that, he's such a big dude that he's such an overwhelming presence. And the fact that he is, has a calm demeanor, he talks about the way he plays in such a, I don't know, he just seems like a really smart guy as well. I think it takes people back a little bit with the fact that he's not just, this big overwhelming personality also, just because of his stature. So he's almost like a gentle giant in the sense, and obviously it's done well in the clubhouse. I mean, taking over the music duties and things like that, that's something that's real cool. I think having the young kids come in and do things like that and win over the veterans is a big deal, because I think it talks about them as players and as people too.
He's got a lot to prove though in the first half of next year.
Yes, and he does.
Cashman said that it's not a guaranteed spot for Aaron Judge out of spring training. He needs to prove himself in spring training. There's no absolutes. The quote was, he'll have to earn his way on like everybody else next year. There are no absolutes. So if Judge stinks in spring training next year, there's a chance he doesn't make the team. And he's going to be 25 years old next year. So I know he's still a prospect, but at the same time, he's no longer a raw kid. He needs to be developing on the field. It needs to start materializing on the field. I think the fact that he has shown a history of struggling every time he moves up a level is actually encouraging, the fact that this is kind of a known commodity, right? The fact that we know he was going to struggle. He struggled. So make adjustments next year. And he needs to. He's going to have, I believe, the whole first half of next year to prove himself. I don't think the Yankees are going to give up on him early. But if he's stinking come June, they're probably going to have to go in another direction, whether that's trade him or start playing him in reserve time or start moving him down to AAA. Something's going to have to happen if he really stinks next year.
Yeah, well, I certainly don't think they're going to trade him, even if he has a bad first half. I think at that point you'd be selling way too low, and I just don't think they're – I mean, they've come this far with him that they're not going to be giving up on a guy like that. But there's a couple things that, to me, are sticking out in my mind just as I'm thinking about this now. And one, first of all, in spring training, there's going to be a ton of outfield competition for those spots. I mean, there's a lot of guys – I mean, you even look into AAA with Clint Frazier. We all think that he's definitely not going to be up next year, at least not in the first half. But you never know. I mean, what if he gets off to a really, really hot spring and he makes it a very difficult decision? You just never know. Like you said, it's guaranteed. The one thing that you know, we've always been praising his mentality and the way he approaches things, and the fact that he knows that the struggles, while early, are part of the process. I hope that his mentality is not to almost expect the struggle and just be like, okay, well, I'm struggling. That's what's supposed to happen. That's what has happened. Rather than really, really, you know, grind and get angry that the struggle is continuing and doing everything that he possibly can to get out of that struggle. I just hope it's not something like, okay, well, this is part of the process and I'm just going to continue to do what I do because it's going to naturally come out of it, because that's what's always happened.
Right.
You know, this is a big jump. AAA to the majors obviously is the biggest jump. And, you know, I don't think that's going to be the case. It's not going to be as easy. I mean, he's going to have to work double the time, I think, to really, make it a success. So I do hope his mentality is positive in that way, where it's very much forward thinking in the way that he has to adjust.
Right. There's a certain amount of time where him still showing confidence, even though he's struggling, is fine and encouraging. But right. To a certain point, it's going to start to get annoying.
And exactly.
If he's batting 200 and it's halfway through the season and he has 100 strikeouts and he's still saying it's going to come. Well, you need to start to prove it eventually before we keep giving you a pass.
Right.
It's absolutely right. So that's definitely one of the main things to look for in spring training in the first couple months of next season, is how Aaron Judge starts to develop. And it sucks that he's out for the rest of the year, because it did seem like they were going to let him continue to go through the growing pains this year, and it would have done him a lot of good to continue to do that. Speaking of more injuries, unfortunately, it seems like Castro and Ellsbury, there's a very real chance they're done for the season. Castro suffered a hamstring injury on Saturday, and Ellsbury suffered a knee injury, and with 13, 14 games to go in the season, you probably don't push those guys, right?
Yeah, you definitely do not want to have the possibility of this injury becoming a long-term thing. I mean, especially with Ellsbury, and we know how fragile he is and the injuries that he's had. It seems like he's actually been relatively durable this year. So you definitely don't want to, ruin that and go into spring of 2017 with him, you know, rehabbing an injury at that point. You want him to be completely healthy going into the spring. And then Castro, same thing. I mean, hamstrings are funny in the sense that they linger. They seem to linger quite a bit. So it was a grade one. So hopefully he can come back from that. But yeah, you're right. Especially what happens tonight, we're recording this before the Sunday night game. If they are to lose tonight and this continues, then yeah, the shutdowns are going to be they're imminent. They're going to happen sooner than later.
Yeah, a little behind the scenes for you. We were talking about when we would record this week because of the Sunday night game, and we were gonna think about doing it after the game. This was back on Thursday before we knew what the results were. The first three games, it was like, all right, well, let's see how the first three games go. And if it's the Yankees either won all three games or won two out of three, then maybe it could potentially be a huge game Sunday night. But at this point, the Yankees are trying to salvage a four-game series. And I think you and I both agreed that recording before the game was pretty okay, considering how crappy they've looked in the first three games.
Oh, yeah. I mean, old man Ryan kicked in, too, when you tried to tell me you wanted to record at midnight.
I wanted to record at 11:30 at night, and you acted
what are you
like
talking
it was
about?
3 in the morning.
It is 3 in the morning. I'm worthless these days if I go to if I'm up too late. It's just the
too
body
late.
Is changing.
12:30 at night is too late for you.
Oh, yeah, because I'm up. I mean, it doesn't matter what time I go to bed. I'm still up at 5:36 in the morning every day. So that's the problem. It's not like I can sleep in.
So you pretty much went from being like, is there a point in life where you go from like 29 to 30 and then all of a sudden you're now up at 5 in the morning every day?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not up at 5 in the morning every day. It's like I have a dog that's up at 6. That she's like my alarm clock every single day. It's ridiculous. I cannot get her out of the habit. But yeah, no, there's a point. I mean, I don't go to like the bars anymore. I don't like do every Friday, Saturday night. So there's like and for me it was very abrupt. It was like, all right, I'm sick of this. I'm not going to do this every day. I'm not going to do this every weekend anymore. And that's when things started to change. But well, I drank a lot in my 20s. I mean, I really took advantage of that. So
you enjoyed your 20s.
I did. And yeah, I had a little too much fun.
So speaking of those games, let's talk about Thursday. We already kind of talked about it, but it's probably going to unfortunately define the 2016 Yankees is Thursday's game.
Yeah.
I honestly put it up there with the 04 Veritek A-Rod brawl game, which the Red Sox walked off with Bill Miller against Mariano Rivera. I was at that game at Fenway Park with my dad, and I remember sprinting out of Fenway Park with my dad, and he turned to me and he's like, I have a bad feeling about this season. Obviously, we know what went on to happen, but I put it up there with that loss. I mean, playoff losses are obviously different, but as far as regular season losses go, I don't know how it gets any worse than Thursday night.
It was bad. I mean, it was bad in the sense because it was the beginning of the series. It was a big series that the Yankees were looking to take advantage of this. I mean, we're looking at the AL East leader, and we can do something about it. That was the mentality at that point. You're going in with a 5-1, right? It was a 5-1 at that point?
It was 5-1 at one point.
It was 5-1, but it was 5-2
in the ninth. It was 5-2.
So you're walking in and like, okay, we got this. You know, at that point, I think when the inning started – to me, I thought Betances was not available at that point.
Yeah.
And they were just going to – and Girardi was just going to mix and match. And, yeah, I mean, absolutely. It was a gut-wrenching loss. There's no doubt about it. It was a terrible loss, and it set the tone. And you could just feel the fact after they lost that game that the rest of the series was not going to go well.
Oh, yeah. Once they lost Thursday, it was – I wrote the rest of the series off. I don't care. I know they were leading on Saturday, but it didn't matter. I mean, Thursday was one of those losses that punches you right in the gut, and it's hard to recover. And you're absolutely right. The fact that Joe Girardi starts the ninth inning with Tommy Lane and Blake Parker in a save situation at Fenway Park trying to set the tone for a series, I absolutely agree with you. I figured Betances is not pitching tonight. And then right. I see him warming up, and I'm like, what the hell are you doing, Girardi? How do you not give Betances the clean inning? We know how he struggles when he comes in with runners on base, especially we've seen over the last week because he struggles to throw to bases and also he can't really hold runners on. I believe it's 18 of 18 base stealers are successful against him. So you do everything you can to give him a clean inning. And I know Girardi was probably thinking, well, he's thrown a lot this week and he's tired, so I want to maybe only have him pitch two outs.
He was trying to get one. He was
but
trying to get one
you
on
You cannot
them.
Try and pull a fast one at yeah. Fenway Park in a save situation in the first game of a four-game series. That is the most pressure of all pressure situations. You have to go to your best guy in that situation. I want nothing to do with Tommy Lane and Blake Parker on the mound in the ninth inning.
My only problem with Girardi with that ninth inning, the way he handled it was, I mean, it's a very big problem, but it's the one problem. If you're going to go in with that in that inning and Betances is not available, then you know what? You mix and match. You do what you got to do to get out of that inning. But that means Betances is on the shelf. Like he is done, not coming in no matter what. If there is any inkling of Betances coming in, you got to start the inning with Betances. There's just no doubt about it. The fact that he didn't just screwed the entire night. And, you know, he's been doing the, you know, when there's a pinch hitter come up, lefty-righty, he burns a guy, and then he goes and burns another guy because of there's a pinch hitter. He's constantly doing this type of stuff.
Well, he loves when the rosters expand because he's got an extra five guys to work with.
Oh, it's just more overthinking. It's ridiculous. But Blake Parker, Tommy Lane, if you're going to go in with these guys and those are the guys that you're starting inning with, you better figure out a way to do it with those guys. Don't show me Betances because then you're showing me you had a better option before you got to those guys. And that's going to make me very angry. And that is what made me so mad about that. You get Patantis in there. He struggles. I mean, obviously, the very fresh loss against the Dodgers the night before was right there with him. And he just hadn't been throwing the ball well. You could see the breaking ball wasn't biting. He was leaving that up in the zone. He wasn't getting it called for strike. There were a couple of balls in there. That last one to Hanley, to me, looked like a strike. The check swing. And then there was one, I think that at bat before that, there was it was the first pitch. It was the first or second pitch of that at bat as well that I thought was a strike.
Yeah.
That was not called.
Well, it's also a situation where you could clearly see Betances had no confidence in his fastball. And
right.
He was.
Well, they were sitting fastball. That's what they were doing. They were just waiting for him to throw the fastball.
Well, I mean, they were taking. But he was using his slider like his fastball.
Right. Well, I think because they were sitting on it.
Year.
Yeah, but that's okay if your slider's working. The breaking ball is actually breaking and it's not just, you know, rolling over flat at the top of the zone, because that's what it did the entire night. He didn't break one ball off.
Well,
and then there was a cross up too. There was even a cross up on the home run. If you look at the replay of Gary Sanchez flinching,
it was a slider.
Yeah, he thought it was a breaking ball and it was a fastball coming.
Total disconnect. It was probably a situation where Betances was mentally half somewhere else.
Right.
So, but it just sucks that, unfortunately, the two losses that are going to define the season and probably knock the Yankees out of the playoffs, Wednesday and Thursday, come on to Betances' shoulders. The Wednesday game when he imploded in the ninth inning, Castro made the error, and then he ended up shot-putting the ball over Sanchez's head. Can't throw to the bases. It's infuriating. I will never understand how a pitcher can throw 98 miles an hour on the corner of the plate from 60 feet away, but can't throw it 75 miles an hour to a base. I just don't.
And then on Thursday night, he did that underhand little shovel pass to Sanchez at home plate to get it out. But there was a little chuckle after that. Like, you see what I did there? I underhanded it. I'm not going to throw it overhand.
Well,
yeah, he has a problem. He's got a little Chuck Knoblauch situation going on with the throwing.
Like, do you remember John Lester had that same situation this year? Do you remember at the beginning of the year he couldn't throw to bases?
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy how it gets in your brain like that.
So of course it sparked people overreacting, or maybe not overreacting, to Betances' struggles. We got a bunch of mailbags on Betances, so instead of doing them at the end of the show, let's do them right now. Maybe do you want to just read all of these and then we can address them all after? First one comes to Jay Collier on Twitter. He says, regarding Thursday's loss, who is more to blame for the ninth inning, Joe or Betances? Also, is Betances being overused, or has he just lost confidence in his own stuff? Actually, you know what? That's specifically asking questions. Let's address that right now.
Yeah.
Put the blame pie, Joe and Betances, for Thursday.
I don't know. I have a very difficult time putting it all on the manager. I think he absolutely led to the fallout. But you know, at the end of the day, players have to execute. The fact of the matter is that Betances did not execute at all, and he wasn't good. Do I think Joe should have started him with a clean inning? Absolutely, I should have think. But who's to say that he wouldn't have walked the first two and then been in a similar situation? Because that very well could have happened with the way he was throwing. So I got to go both. I mean, I don't agree with the way that Joe did it, that, you know, worked the ninth inning. But at the same time, you know, Betances has to be mentally tough and has to execute the pitches at that point. You got to win that game. I mean, you cannot sneak out of that with the way that it went down. And I have to place a lot of it on Betances as well, because of the way that it happened with Hanley and seeing the cross up between Sanchez and Betances. Something wasn't right there. There was definitely something not right in his head. And I got to believe that it was on Betances and not Sanchez as far as the cross-up.
I'm going 30% Joe, 70% Betances.
Yeah.
30% Joe, because you have to put your players in the best position for them to succeed. And the situation that Betances most succeeds in is a clean inning. And he didn't do that. So that's his 30%. But you come in with one runner on base and a three-run lead and one out, you got to get two more outs. You can't give up five runs. So that's right. 70% Betances. He looked horrible. He's probably overused at this point. I mean, no pitcher in baseball, relief pitcher, has pitched more than Dellin Betances since the beginning of 2014. The dude is a workhorse. And we saw it last year in September. Remember, he kind of struggled last year in September? He's probably getting a little tired
So. Well, and that was one of the big things when we had the other two guys, when we had Chapman and we had Miller, is that we were like, oh, well, these all three guys are going to be fresh when it comes to September. This is going to really help everybody out. But Tantus is not going to be that overworked guy at the end of the year again. It's going to be, you know, more of a, you know, it's going to be spread around a lot more at the end of the game. So this is really going to help at the end of the season. And yes, it would have if the season played out that way and the Yankees could actually score some runs early in the year. But the fact of the matter is, when the trade deadline came, everybody got shipped out. Betances was the guy, and he was kind of the only guy. I mean, yes, Clippard came in and pitched well. Warren had pitched well early. I mean, to me, he's been horrible lately. I mean, the guy's just been look like batting practice.
Yeah, we might be seeing why.
Betances is the only guy you can trust.
Might be seeing why Warren was in AAA for the Cubs.
Yeah, he's looked bad. He can't get anybody out. I mean, no one's fooled by him at this point in the season.
Came in that Thursday game with a 4-run lead in the 8th inning, served up a home run to Ortiz.
Yep.
Yeah, he's looked really bad, and he's also looked. I mean, wild pitch on Saturday as well. So, the next question comes from Rob, or the next mailbag. He says the Yankees traded the wrong guy. They should have kept Miller and traded Betances. Betances is a setup guy, not a closer. Not because he blew the 5-2 lead, but because he panics and can't even throw to a base. He does not have the tools to be a closer. We'll address that last part about him not having the tools with the next few mailbags, but do you think they traded the wrong guy in trading Andrew Miller?
No. They traded the right guy because what they were looking for is value and return, and Andrew Miller was going to bring back the most value and the most return for a player when they were basically selling to load up the minor leagues. Dylan Betances is a guy that's controlled for a while. He's younger. No, they gave up the right guy at that point.
I think you could have gotten equal. I think you could have got Clint Frazier for Dylan Betances.
I don't know.
Yeah.
He doesn't have the track record as Andrew Miller, though. He doesn't have the save situations.
He doesn't have the saves that Andrew Miller has, but
I think that absolutely means something,
especially to a team like Cleveland. He's more attractive because he's controlled for cheaper money. He's controlled longer for cheaper money than Andrew Miller.
Not when you're trying to win now. Not when you're trying to win right now and you have a guy that needs to lock down the very end of the ball game and you know is a proven commodity at that, because Dylan Betances at that point was not that guy.
But the Indians have been using Andrew Miller not as a closer. He's been pitching in the 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th. It's actually pretty amazing how Terry Francona has been using Andrew Miller. He's kind of like his fire extinguisher anytime there's a big situation. And I wish Joe Girardi would do this. And I am pissed off about Joe Girardi for not doing this on Saturday. But Andrew Miller comes in and kind of calms the game down whenever there's a situation. So they're not using him as their everyday closer.
I know that, but that's a Tito Francona thing. That's not the general manager going out looking for value and looking for a specific guy. I mean, when he's in the building, he's used it a different way. That's the manager. That's the manager. I mean, how much input does the manager have at the trade deadline? Probably slim to none. You know, I'm sure they'll talk to him about certain guys, but it's not the way that they approach it. It's just the fact that Andrew Miller is a proven commodity at the end of the game. He's definitely got more of that demeanor. If I were to put these two guys next to each other and say, who's the better closer, I'm going to give it to Andrew Miller every day of the week and twice on Sunday, because I've seen him do it 100 times. The guy never, ever, ever, ever seems rattled. And, you know, he's a commodity that's proven. And to me, that's more of a value. So that's why I think they would have gotten less for a Betances.
I don't think they traded the wrong guy, because Andrew Miller is only locked up for another year and a half. But I disagree with you that I don't think they could have gotten equal value for Dylan Betances. All right, so Rudy G says, hey guys, that one on Thursday hurts. I watched the game before jumping on a red-eye flight, and the guy sitting next to me had a Red Sox shirt. I was ready to punch him in the face until I realized he was a fake fan and had no idea what just happened. He was kind of big country guy from Kentucky anyway, so I felt sorry for him wearing that stupid shirt. Anyways, when do we talk about Dylan not being the guy to close? There is no doubt he is sick when he's on and makes batters look silly, but what does it matter if he can only do that against the Twins in a low-pressure situation? I watch a lot of games with my 13-year-old kid, and even he turned to me earlier in the season and said, I don't think Dylan can be a closer. How many times does he have to come in and walk the first guy? I know Girardi and his teammates are saying last night's loss is not on him, but I think they're just being good teammates. The last two nights are totally on him. He's talking about Wednesday and Thursday. But what about our alternatives? I think Severino might be an alternative, but I know they want him to start. And he goes on to compare him to Mariano in 95, 96. And he says, can't wait for your episode celebrating ring number 28.
Well, that might be a while. But, okay, so there's a few things in here, I guess, that we can address in the sense that, I mean, I do think that Dellin can be the closer, absolutely. I mean, this is a guy that's really was thrown into the job this year at the end of the trade deadline. And you know, overall has done a good job. Yes, he's had some blemishes lately, and they were big situations. So, you know, some people will probably look more into that. I personally don't look as much into that. I like to see more of a larger sample size, and I see the way that the guy has handled himself. Because he's honestly, I've always had the impression of Dellin Betances as a guy who has been cool, calm, and collected. I understand the throwing to the base thing. I mean, that's got to be addressed, absolutely, because it's an issue. But I absolutely think he's got the moxie to be a closer.
Yeah, I mean, where were these people chirping when he was perfect in August for close situations?
Yeah, right.
I think it's...
Well, I think a lot of people judge it on big situations, you know, and they overreact to that.
Yeah, but there was plenty of big games in August when the team was on a win streak. None as big as Thursday in Boston, but he looks fried. He looks like he's pitching with 60% capacity, so I understand that he's getting hit. It sucks that it seems like every year he's in September on his last leg. I think maybe they need to worry about that earlier in the season. And it's a lot. He's pitched a lot of innings, like I said, over the last 3 years. So I think it's less about that he can't do it and more about he's just tired.
But at the same time, that maybe that's an issue. Maybe he cannot withstand an entire year. If we're going to talk about that and the fact that this is the second year now that he's been exhausted in September, and really early on this year, he had a lot of work that was spread amongst other guys. Granted, they were being used quite a bit because the team was struggling and there were a lot of tight games. But, I mean, if we're going to talk about where we're concerned, I'd say that would right now probably be at the top of my list of if he can handle a full season and be effective at the end of the season. That, I think, is a legitimate argument and a discussion that can happen if this guy has the, you know, physical skills to actually endure an entire season and be effective when you need him the most at the end of your regular season and then into the playoffs. That, to me, is probably the biggest point.
Absolutely. And it decreases his value if you have to spare his innings in April, May, and June.
Yeah.
Especially as a closer. Robin Lett asks, do the Yankees need to make a move for Chapman or Davis in the offseason? And then we also have a similar question from Joe's McFly. He says, even though the pen is still dominant, would you still sign Chapman? What about the other bullpen arms? I think he asked that question before the meltdown on Thursday. Interesting, though. Did you see that Ken Rosenthal stat? I think he tweeted it on Wednesday. He said, Chapman, Miller, since leaving the Yankees, have a 1.83 ERA and 39 and a third innings pitched. And Clippard and Warren, since joining the Yankees, have a 1.82 ERA and 39 and two-thirds innings pitch. So essentially the same stats. And I know ERA isn't necessarily the best stat to measure for a bullpen guy because strikeouts, walks, whip, hits, all that stuff is also key. Sometimes ERAs can be warped when you only pitch a certain number of innings. But the bottom line is Clippard and Warren have not given up many runs since they join the Yankees. That was before the meltdowns. Yeah.
Well, and I think Warren lately, I don't know what his numbers are over the past 3 weeks or so, but to me, he's been a different guy over, you know, in September. He hasn't pitched as well.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll eat it with those, with what I just said in the numbers, but the eye test, he just hasn't been good. I mean, he hasn't been able to get many out. Clipper's been good the whole time. He hasn't really shown.
Clipper's been ridiculous. One earned run in 19 innings.
Yeah. That's phenomenal. Good.
So most of those stats,
respect power.
Most of those stats are Clippard's numbers.
Well, yeah, I mean, see the fact that and I don't know when was that tweeted out?
Wednesday.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's pretty late. It's pretty late. It's very interesting the fact that they really haven't dropped off much with the numbers though. They're almost identical numbers.
So I think if you're concerned with Betances, I mean, if you sign Chapman, he's going to be your closer. If you sign Wade Davis or I don't know about Mark Melanson, you probably don't make him your closer. But if you sign Wade Davis or Aroldis Chapman, that's your closer next year. You think the Yankees are interested in bringing in a new closer for next year?
Yeah, I do think that they would be interested in Chapman. I could see them bringing him back. And because, you know, I've talked about this in the past. I think the Yankees are a twofold team. They want to bring a guy who can help them win, and they also want to bring a guy who can bring excitement and butts in the seats, and he does both.
Yeah, and I think they might be able to justify more to Betances demoting him again if it's Chapman versus if it's some other guy new to the organization.
Right. I still have a feeling they do see Betances as a long-term guy. But you're right. If Chapman were to come over and they were to make that deal, then, I mean, obviously he would be the eighth inning guy. And then you got must-see TV again at the end of the game. So that's really what they want. And it does help them win ball games too. So, and the fact that there's really nobody else out there as far as a free agent splash this coming year, I mean, that could be the guy. Just because I think you and I both agree that Cashman, if he's going to make a big splash other than a potential closer like Chapman, that it's going to be via trade.
You don't sign Chapman unless you think you can win the World Series in the next 2 years, though, because
right.
Chapman's probably he's going to get big money over 4, maybe even 5 years, but he's getting up there in age. He's a win now guy. He's not a win in 4 years guy. So,
well, no, because I think one of my big concerns with Chapman when he was here was, obviously he's a dominant guy, but once that fastball starts diminishing and he can't throw hard like that anymore, then he's got to rely on his secondary pitches. And to me, when I'm looking at his secondary pitches, they're just not as good. And I think that he's going to struggle when that velocity starts dipping. So it's just a matter of when that happens. I mean, I know the guy's a freak of an athlete, and maybe he can hold on to that a lot longer than most think and that most have. But when it starts going, I think you're gonna start seeing some significant differences in the way that he gets hit, because his secondary stuff, you know, isn't as good. And I mean, for rightfully so, he hasn't had to develop it as much. He's got that 100 plus mile of a fastball that has late life and it's filthy. So why spend all the time on your breaking stuff?
I was actually he's 28 years old, so he's the same age as Betances. I thought he was older, but still, I still believe it's a win now guy. All right. Lost in the debacle on Thursday was the fact that Tanaka pitched well. And I believe last week I called him out saying that I need to see it in a must-win game. And Thursday was a must-win game. And he pitched 7 innings, 1 earned run, 4 hits, 0 strikeouts, which was kind of weird. I don't know if I can remember an outing where Tanaka has 0 strikeouts. He got 15 ground balls, a lot of weak contact.
That's a huge number, though. 15 ground outs.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
It's. I've never seen him pitch like they pitching like a sinker baller, and that's. I've never seen him pitch like that. I don't care how you get the outs if you get the outs. So great. He struggled in, I believe it was the third inning, and after that really settled down. I think he retired like 12 of the last 15 batters he faced. Girardi pulled him after 7 innings and 93 pitches, and I know Girardi got a lot of shit for this, but I'm actually somehow going to defend Girardi on this. Because it was a 5-1 ball game, and you had a bullpen that's been very good, and Girardi does not let Tanaka go up around 100 pitches very often. I went back and looked at it, and in 2016, Tanaka's made 30 starts, which is remarkable that he's been that durable. We at the beginning of the season said the biggest thing for Tanaka is can he stay healthy a whole season, and he has. But he's only pitched at least 100 pitches 10 times, so a third of the time. Last year, he pitched 100 pitches 9 of 24 times, so even less than this year. But in 2014, he reached 100 pitches 14 out of 20 times before the injury, and 14 of them came in a span of 15 games. So he was going at least 100 pitches pretty much every game in his first season. Girardi was letting him go out there and pitch. And since that elbow injury, they have kind of managed when they push him and when they don't push him. Girardi probably figured this is not a time I need to push him. I have a 4-run lead with a solid bullpen and I need 6 more outs. I don't need to push my starter to go another 15 pitches when it's unnecessary. So I know Tanaka was cruising, but I understand Girardi's thinking. I can't believe I'm defending Girardi on this one, but I actually am.
You're defending Girardi because it's against Tanaka.
No, I'm not.
I'm just joking.
If it was any starter.
No. I do not have any blame with Joe Girardi, because this has been the track record. And we have seen him once he starts getting outside his zone, outside his comfort zone, and he starts getting over 100 pitches, then he's a different guy. And this has been the way he's handled it the entire time. 5-1 game, win the ball game, win the ball game. And, you know, if he had left him in, how many people would be destroying him right now if he gets hit around a little bit? And that very well could have happened. I mean, you see him, you see Tanaka once he starts getting into that range, leaving balls up. You see, balls start leaving the park. There's a number of things that could have happened that gone badly. You got to win that game no matter what, you know, with the bullpen. So I got no problem with Joe pulling him at that point. Honestly, you need 6 outs. Go do it.
Yeah, that's on the bullpen, not Girardi.
Right.
Mailbag question from Tyler Park. He said,
Can I read this one?
Read his handle though.
Okay, so it's at Ty_Park8. Ty, I'm sorry I don't trust you already just because you're underscore, but that's besides the point. Tanaka now has a sub-3 ERA, is a top-5 Cy Young contender, pitched well in a must-win game late in the year. Can Andrew finally stop making asinine complaints? I truly hope so, Tyler. I mean, I really hope that Andrew can look in the mirror and realize that this is a guy who is now leading the AL in ERA, literally the top ERA guy in the AL. He's I think he's thrown 193 innings, so he's going to hit 200 innings this year. This is a guy who's thrown 200 innings, leads the American League in ERA with this team, and is you know, everybody's looking at him as a Cy Young contender. I really do hope Andrew has come to his senses. We'll see though.
I will, first of all, Tyler, thanks for the mailbag, but I will never stop making asinine complaints. That's just in my
that's nature. True. That is true.
You better hope Masahiro Tanaka does not win the Cy Young, because I'm going to tell you what's going to happen if he wins the Cy Young. After next season, he's going to opt out of his contract, and then the stupid Yankees are going to give him a 5-year, $120 million extension, and we're going to be stuck with this guy until he's 36 years old. I do not want that to happen.
I actually don't think they would give it to him.
Oh, my God. Of course they would. They gave it to CC Sabathia, and he wasn't even good anymore when he opted out.
Yeah, but CC Sabathia didn't have elbow injuries. I don't think they would give it to him. I don't think they'd give him a 5-year extension.
Well, he's going to opt out, and he's going to be only 28 years old when he opts out.
Yeah. I think the elbow factor would deter a lot of people, and I think it would actually deter the Yankees from doing that. I mean, just because of it seems like Brian Cashman is finally making some of the calls, I don't think Cashman would do it.
If he opts out, I would be fine with letting him walk. Or if they only want to extend him one season, I would be fine with that. But I think he's going to be looking for basically a new 7-year contract, because that's what pitchers get on the
market. What's the contract if he doesn't opt out?
He continues to make, I think, $22.5 million for 3 more seasons after that.
Okay.
So he'd be looking at $25 million a year for 5+ years if he was a free agent at 20 years old. I mean, look what Zach Greinke got, and he was 30.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, first of all, I don't think he's going to win the Cy Young. I don't think it's going to be – I think if the Yankees – do not make the playoffs.
Well, That doesn't matter.
I think it does. I think it's in the back of minds.
I think for MVP it matters, but for Cy Young, I mean, Felix Hernandez won for the Mariners a couple years ago, and they stunk. They finished in last place, and he had like an 11-12 record or something like that.
Yeah, I don't remember who. I remember noting that in my brain. I can't pull out any stats or names because my memory is completely screwed, but. Then there was no other clear leader, right? There was nobody in there with 20 wins and a low ERA.
Right,
and
you got Rick Porcello.
Yeah, that's who's going to win.
Somehow has 20 wins.
Right. I don't know how in God's name I looked up and there were 20 wins under his belt. I don't know how that happened, but he's going to win Cy Young.
I'll tell you how that happens. The Red Sox have 4 guys in that lineup who have 90-plus RBIs.
Yeah, but he's got a good ERA as well. And he's got a 3 something like low 3s.
Look around the league. Cole Hamels has been good all year, and the Rangers are in first place. Chris Sale and Jose Quintana have been good all year. Porcello has 20 wins. There's Tyler said, Tanaka's probably in the 5 to 7 range of, or probably top 5 of pitchers to get the Cy Young this year.
Yeah, he's in the conversation. He's not going to win it, but he's in the conversation. And the fact that he's in the conversation is good for him. He's had a hell of a year. He really has. And I think he's exceeded all of our expectations. There's no doubt about that. All of our expectations have been exceeded by him. He's been durable. And look, he's a 200-inning guy.
The durability is, guy. That's shocking me. I mean, you're even shocked by that, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm absolutely shocked by the durability and the fact that he's thrown 200 innings.
Well, not yet.
Well, I mean, he's right there. the fact that he's done that to an under three ERA is extremely impressive.
So are you ready?
You got to admit, I need you to give some credit to Masahiro Tanaka.
No, I did. I said he pitched great in a must-win game, and
I need you to give credit on the overall season. Look at him.
Yes.
He's leading the American League in ERA.
It's been a great season. Great season for him. Undoubtedly the Yankees' best pitcher. There's no question about that. I've never said he's a bad pitcher. People are getting on me because I'm saying he's not a true ace. Like I'm calling him like Clay Buchholz or something.
Yeah, well, when you come out and you say that you have no confidence in a guy who was leading the American League in ERA, has a ridiculous win-loss record when he pitches for the Yankees, that you have zero confidence in pitching a big game.
I said five. 5 out of 10. 50% confidence.
Okay, that's zero when you're talking about a number one pitcher. That's a zero. I mean, yes, it is. It's zero. You might as well be the Oakland A's.
Are you ready for my complaint about Tanaka?
No, nobody wants to hear it anymore.
No,
nobody wants to hear it.
I think people are going to like this one. So
I don't think anybody wants to hear it.
Here's a reason why he's not in the ace category of a Kershaw or a Bumgarner or any of the guys in the league.
Guys that are going to be in the Hall of Fame. Okay, keep going.
Right, yeah, that's what I'm saying. But that's what people are calling him this year. That people are saying he's the best pitcher in the league, and he's just flat out not. And a reason he's not, I can't call him a true ace, is because the dude can't go over 100 pitches. You shouldn't have to manage your ace and take him out of a game with 93 pitches. I agreed with Girardi that he had to do it because that's the situation they're in with Tanaka. But you should be able to let your ace go out there and pitch 100 pitches is not a lot of pitches. I'm not asking him to throw 145 pitches. I'm just saying you should be able
100
to
is
over
the 100 is a lot these days. 100 is a lot.
Plenty of pitchers.
That's where you're wrong. You're saying 104. You're exaggerating the top right there. You're exaggerating the top like that. Like people get to that all the time.
But you shouldn't have to be afraid of your ace going to say 106 pitches or something like that.
People are afraid of Kershaw doing it now.
This year,
I guarantee they're going to be having gloves on with Kershaw
because of his back. But in the last
he's had injuries and they're doing it right.
But in the last five seasons, he has pitched every start. 100 pitches every time.
Well, let's see if we're singing the same tune. Let's see if you're singing the same tune next year and the year after that when Kershaw has shown that he can have an injury. I guarantee that the gloves are going to be on with Kershaw from now on, no matter if he can do it or not. The organization, because of the money spent, and that is the biggest thing, you calling somebody an ace is very relative because a lot of the decisions are being made by the contract. So and because of the contract and keeping them healthy is more of a priority than having them throw 113 pitches compared to 95 pitches or 90 pitches or 100 pitches. So it's just a very big difference.
Am I kind of acting like Goose Gossage, get off my lawn, where back in the day, pitchers used to go 120 pitches?
Yeah, it doesn't happen anymore.
It sucks.
This is the problem with you, I think.
So now
your expectations are out of line.
We're paying starters $25 to $35 million a year to have to treat them with kid gloves and take them out after 93 pitches because we can't let our ace go over 100 pitches or else.
And it's
a
double-edged sword. It's because they're paying them so much money.
We got pitchers like Rich Hill getting blisters. We've got pitchers who can't go over 100 pitches like Tanaka with elbow soreness. It's freaking asinine. I hate it.
It's a pussified society.
It is.
And the fact that the money is there and there's an entire, the organization is dependent on these $22 to $30 million contracts yearly. They're going to treat them like with kid gloves because of that. That money is guaranteed. Look, we'd be sitting a very different tune. And I think we would see a very, very different, different landscape of baseball and pitching if these contracts were not guaranteed. I do think that we'd see a lot more guys going way higher. Because they're not guaranteed contracts anymore. Then you'd really see what guys are made of. Then you'd see Bumgarner going out there and throwing 140, 150 pitches.
Well, then maybe
but they're guaranteed. That's what it is.
Maybe you wouldn't have the pitchers themselves being willing to do it.
It's a guaranteed contract for that year. I mean, they're going to do it. They want to get their next contract, right? They don't want to be a difficult person. The fact of the matter is the money tied to these guys is so immense now and so damning long-term if they get hurt that they're going to – It's coming from the top. You know that. It's coming from the top. Yeah. That I guarantee they have a number of pitches in their brain for the end of the year on where they want to see him. They have an innings and they have a pitch number. And that's what's, there's meetings that happen before the year and they give ranges and they say, this is where we want him to be. This is where we're comfortable. That's what's happening.
Nolan,
I don't know how much you can blame Tanaka on that.
Somewhere Nolan Ryan is sitting with a giant dip in his lip spitting into a cup, calling people pussies.
Yep. You're right.
Let's backtrack to that Dodgers series. It was kind of odd to see a giant LA Dodgers flag out in left field, wasn't it? I think 2,000 fans showed up of Dodger fans. They kind of took over the left field lower level.
Yeah.
That's unacceptable in my mind.
I mean, what do you do?
Boo them. In the old stadium, that would have not happened.
10 years ago, that wouldn't have happened.
Okay, the old stadium.
We can't bully people anymore. So back in the day, you could bully people.
This is more pussification stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't have your pitchers go 100 pitches and you can't bully people out of stadiums. I hate it.
Damn right.
What is this society coming to?
O'Doyle does not rule any longer.
They were loud and clear. I mean, the 2,000 Dodgers fans were louder than the rest of the Yankee fans there.
It's a goddamn shame, and it needs to change, and I think we should do something about it.
On Monday, the Yankees had not lost 6 of 7 games at that point. We were calling last week for the Yankees fans to start getting back on this bandwagon, and what happens Monday night, a bunch of Dodger fans show up.
Was this like a fan contingent from like a website or something like that?
Yeah, they've done this.
That we can start a fight with?
Yeah. they have a Twitter handle. I don't remember it. I didn't write it down. They were at Billy's before the game. They were in a sea. There was like a sea of blue, Dodger blue at Billy's. Overtook the bar.
Wow.
They've done this in a bunch of stadiums, but I think this Yankees one was their biggest turnout.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's definitely that flag was massive. How do you even get into the stadium with that thing that,
I was gonna
that
ask
size? That's my question.
That flag should have been
vetoed from the stadium. There's no doubt about that. That's where it should have ended.
A whole section. That was like 20 rows of flag. How does that get in the stadium? That's a big ass flag.
Like, there's not one person carrying that in a backpack.
And imagine being under that flag if you're a Yankees fan. I would kill somebody.
Yeah. I didn't even think about that.
Like, if you're just stuck in the middle.
At that point, I would have been irate and I would have been belligerent. And the flag, there would have been a very big rip in that flag. There would have been an issue.
So much flag talk. Colin Kaepernick not standing for the national anthem, Dodger flag at Yankee Stadium. Flags are taking over the pop culture these days.
Yeah. The Dodger flag and the American flag are very different things, though.
Something the Yankees have not been able to do since, really, the Dodger series is pass around that WWE-style World Champs belt. CeCe got it in that game, that Dodgers game, when he pitched great. Didn't get the win, but the Yankees came back late. Didi and – was it Ellsbury and Didi hit the home runs? So this kind of came out of nowhere. Some people said they saw it on Snapchat. I don't have a Snapchat. I guess I'm too old for Snapchat. But the Yankees have been passing around a World Champs belt for the MVP of the game. I loved it at the time. I thought that's the kind of crap that brings teams together. It's stuff like that where you start to see wins on the field. It hasn't really materialized last week, though.
Yeah, it was like Pedro's midget, the one who'd always have it on his shoulder.
Yep.
That little dude.
Yep.
It was a... not a midget.
The midget word is no longer...
I'll probably get in trouble for saying midget.
You can't say midget.
Yeah. The fact that
you can't say 100 pitches and you can't say midget.
The fact that there's, you know, just one of those things that they're passing around. Yeah, it's a cool clubhouse thing. And it's probably brought on by some of the kids that came up. And
that has Judge written all over it, right?
Yeah. I mean, let's be honest. A-Rod and Beltran and these guys are not bringing in something fun like that. It was a very no fun clubhouse. There's no doubt about it when all these guys were there.
But I thought last year they were kind of having fun.
Remember, yeah, but you know who was doing it? Was when Slade Heathcott hit that home run.
You got J.R. Murphy. Don't call him J.R. Can't say the J.R. either.
When John Ryan Murphy was dumping beers on everybody and he was just like hammered in the dugout. Like, this is a guy that was trying to have fun. A young kid.
A-Rod, you remember A-Rod's quotes last year talking about how it was like a college atmosphere and the young guys were mixing with the old guys and it was kind of like a frat atmosphere?
And that's exactly what's happening now. It's when the young guys come up. That's why I expect next year to be phenomenal.
Good stuff for next year. Let the kids take over the leadership in the clubhouse. That's why I think Didi is the perfect guy, because he's a veteran, but he's still young.
Yeah, and
Carlos Beltran is a dinosaur. Carlos Beltran is a freaking dinosaur.
Yeah.
He's Country
5
Breakfast.
Years older than me.
Country Breakfast is also a dinosaur.
I love a Country Breakfast, though, I must say. The fact that you have the nickname Country Breakfast, it's so specific.
Does not fit for the Bronx, New York, though. I feel like Country Breakfast, you need to be playing in the Midwest. Cardinals.
Yeah, you're a Kansas
Cardinals
City guy.
Exactly. He was Kansas
City. That's where he got it.
Do you remember when Robbie Cano didn't select Billy Butler for the Home Run Derby in Kansas City? And
That was when Kansas City was all crazy with their voting.
Well, this was before they even went to the playoffs. This was the year before they were good.
But did they not vote everybody in that year when they were?
No,
because it was in Kansas City, right?
No, last year is the year they voted everybody in. Their who was their shortstop? Alcides Escobar, right?
He's Escobar, yeah.
He's batting like .220, and he was the starting shortstop. Country Breakfast, though, was struggling with the A's all season. He had a .685 OPS against left-handed pitchers this year, which, just for a little context, was just about as bad as A-Rod had this year. And the Yankees signed him to a guaranteed major league contract for the rest of the season. That does not mean they owe him anything other than a prorated league minimum salary. He's still getting his 10 or 12 million bucks from the Oakland A's. You know how bad he was? Billy Bean and the cheap Oakland A's agreed not to have you on your team anymore.
Yeah, that's surprising, the fact that he's paid for another year and they got rid of him. And rather than trying to at least salvage something in the offseason, you're this close to the end, you'd think that you'd hold on to the dude and try to at least salvage a little bit of something. Some cash.
Why?
Some cash.
He got in a little clubhouse altercation with Danny Valencia.
Yeah, with Danny Valencia. Okay.
Do you know the story?
So I read the article.
Danny Valencia was wearing, so he was supposed to be sponsored by a sponsor to wear a specific cleat, but he was wearing a different type of cleat, and Billy Butler ratted on him to the sponsor.
He wanted that sponsorship, baby.
That's a dick move.
It's all about
Butler,
the dollar,
though. Come on,
it's all about the Benjamins.
That's a dick move, and Valencia punched him. And because
was it like a Geno Smith punch? You get knocked out?
I don't know. But that was the
you
best
have to
thing
wire his jaw back together.
But because Butler was only batting like a .685 OPS, and he got sucker punched by Valencia, they decided to cut him. Probably no spot for the Yankees next year. He might get a better contract from a different team. We never know. He's had a couple good games since being put into the lineup in Fenway, which is ironic.
Yeah, he hasn't been too bad.
But he's kind of like a 2001 player trapped in a, you know, he's kind of belongs in the era of 2001, not 2016. He's a slow dude. He's an on-base percentage guy. He is not a 2016 baseball player.
No, you need to be an athlete now.
Yeah, that dude.
I compared him when I first saw him, when the first game I saw him, I tweeted out that he looked to me, reminded me of a right-handed Lance Berkman when Berkman was with the Yankees.
Except Berkman was a filthy hitter in his prime.
Yeah, no, but I'm talking about, Butler was a pretty good hitter. You know, he had a couple of good years, but I'm saying as a Yankee, that's what he looked like. They were both a little overweight. They were old, a lot slower, and that's kind of what he reminded me of.
All right, final bit of news here is that the Yankees announced they will host a ceremony for David Big Poppy Ortiz on September 29th. And excuse me while I go vomit.
Yeah, you know, the ceremonies, you said something about in that article you wrote, and it was one of the social headlines too. Just like, can we stop with these ceremonies? I mean, it's getting ridiculous. It's annoying. It's, you know, when he comes to our stadium, you know what? We could tip our cap at one point. Maybe there could be something along those lines. But for some reason, like, that's a guy. I'm different, I think, than a lot of people in the sense that if there's a guy that has been a thorn in our side for years and years and years, I'd say Jeter was like that for the Red Sox. But he's always done everything the right way. But he's
I hate
just like,
that, though.
But hold on. Competition-wise, like, a guy that's a thorn in your side, like, I have no problem tipping my cap at the end of the guy. Because there's a respect there. I don't have respect for Ortiz in the sense that I don't think he's a great person. I think he's a, you know, he's selfish. The fact that he was on these lists and then he goes after some of these other guys, like he's not in the same boat. Like, what are you doing? You
calls
are in
out
the, yeah, you're in that same boat, dude.
When so he that, is like the poster child for PEDs, the dude got cut by the Minnesota Twins because he sucked so bad, and then comes over to the Red Sox and hits 500 home runs. That is the poster boy for steroids. And then he calls out these players.
If this was a scenario where we're having, you know, where Dustin Pedroia, this is my comparison, where if he were retiring, like, Pedroia's been a guy that's been, like, a pain in our ass for a long time. He's been a guy that's been really good, and he's always been a pain in the ass. He's a little dude, plays his ass off. I have a lot of respect for Dustin Pedroia because of the way he plays the game. That's a guy that I would stand up and I would clap for because, you know what, I respect you, the fact that you've been a pain in my ass. You know, I've hated you, but at the same time, I respect it, and good for you, good career. Now go away from me. You know, like, that's the guy that I would applaud for. I would have no problem with a guy like that. Ortiz is a different animal, and it bothers me.
I got a lot of stuff on social media, people saying that I was wrong. I wrote an article saying the Yankees should not honor David Ortiz.
There was a lot of both, though. There was a lot of both,
but all the people saying, well, they gave Jeter and Mariano celebrations, and to that I say they shouldn't have, but they did.
Well, what about the freaking painting that they gave Mariano about
the
one that
he... What about the fact that they played a highlight of him getting walked off on in the 2004
yeah,
ALCS?
Yeah, exactly. It was also in jest. It was a bunch of bullshit. That one pissed me off.
They did give him... But it's a totally different situation with Ortiz. I don't understand how you could be a Yankees fan and this does not piss you off. I don't want to know you as a Yankees fan if this doesn't piss you off. The dude not only was a douche about the whole steroid things, he's been a jackass when he smashes telephones in the clubhouse, barges into press conferences demanding that the official scorer give him back an RBI. He said with his own mouth, quoted, that I don't want a farewell tour. I would never do anything like that, like Derek Jeter is doing. Flash forward a year and a half, and the dude's on a farewell tour. How is this not an asshole? How does everybody ignore the fact that David Ortiz is not a jackass? I don't get it. I just don't get it.
Because I think that a lot of people that are talking about this aren't the ones that are like super big Yankee fans, and they don't know everything about the background. They just see him as a guy that was good against us, and why not honor a guy that was good against us and had a good career? Like, and that to me, that's where I present my Pedroia argument. Would you have a problem with Pedroia getting something like that? Would you stand up and
I wouldn't Pedroia? Like it because I'm just sick of ceremonies, but I wouldn't say the Yankees shouldn't do it.
Right. But you see a very big difference in the two players.
Of course. Yeah. And
very similar thorns in the side.
Not only the fact that Ortiz is still to this day murdering you.
Why do we still pitch to him? Why have we always pitched to him?
I don't get it.
I never understood that.
He has always killed us. As he was killing us on Thursday and Friday and Saturday, Yankees ownership was planning a ceremony for him. How does that not make you sick to your stomach if you're a Yankees fan?
Well, the fact that it's him is what does it. I just don't understand why they pitched to him for as many years as they did. I never understood that. But they always would throw to him.
Yeah, I'm not saying David Ortiz has not had a great career. The dude has had an unbelievable career, and I think he probably should be in the Hall of Fame. I know people say DH shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame, which is bullshit, but I think he's done enough offensively and in the playoffs where he should be in the Hall of Fame. I don't care about the steroids. I think Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens should also be in the Hall of Fame, and I would put Ortiz on the list of guys who are on the steroid list, just like A-Rod, but those dudes were the best players of their era. But that does not mean we have to hold a freaking ceremony for him. Watching him receive a stupid gift, it's going to be another birthday cake? The framed David Ortiz jersey that Red Sox fan buried under the new Yankees.
Yeah, you're right. It's
or something really corny like that, because that's all these ceremonies are, is they're corny, and he's gonna be accepting it on the interlocking NY of Yankee Stadium. How does that not piss you off? If you want to send out a press release saying David Ortiz has had a great career and the Yankees would like to make a donation to his charity for $10,000 or whatever, I'd be fine with that. I don't want to take away from a good cause or anything like that, but that doesn't mean we have to go and honor him on the field. It's a huge difference. As a fan of the Yankees, as a diehard fan, I don't want to have to watch that horse shit.
They didn't do it for A-Rod, did they?
No. Where's Teixeira's farewell tour?
Where's Teixeira's farewell tour?
It's
unbelievable.
And people are saying, oh, fake outrage. No, it's legit. I'm pissed off about it.
The guy's an asshole. That's the bottom line.
Yeah. All right.
And I have insider information that he did do steroids.
What? 100%. That he was on the list?
No, that like someone knew. Yeah, I knew a guy that pitched for the Norfolk Tides.
Oh, this is getting
who played
good.
With him many times that knew he did it.
Let's get it. All right, tell the story. Tell the story.
I can't.
You don't have to name names.
Yeah, well, so there was a guy pitching for the Tides. He was on a rehab situation. He was of Hispanic descent. I knew one of the guys. I'm good friends with a buddy, one of my buddies in Norfolk when I was in school, who would like do things for these guys when they were in town. It's very common for
gophers?
A lot of the
they were gophers.
Yeah, but it's very common for a lot of the guys in the minor leagues because a lot of them don't speak very good English. They go to these towns, they don't know what to do. These guys help them out. They're usually like, if they're Dominican, they're Dominican, or if they're Venezuelan, these guys are Venezuelan. Like this guy was a Venezuelan guy and knew a lot of the Dominican guys. And I went to lunch with this guy, with the pitcher, the next day with my buddy, and we spent all day together. I mean, we started at lunch and ended at 3 a.m. at a bar with him salsa dancing on a stage. It was a ridiculous day. And in that term, we called Ortiz on his cell phone, talked to him, got verification of just like the friendship. And then he was telling me all sorts of stories. And one of them was absolutely David Ortiz steroids.
Yeah, great. It's a hilarious story, but obviously. But I don't really care that he did steroids because I think it was a
common
thing.
But it's the fact that he just denies everything and then acts like he doesn't do it. He's like a golden god above everybody else.
Exactly.
And I can't handle it.
He acts like he's holier than thou.
Yes.
And above everyone else is what pisses me off. And the reason that we don't get on Andy Pettit is because he took ownership of it
and
apologized.
Yes. And it was just HGH.
And people are saying,
is bullshit.
And people are saying, like, oh, well, you have no problem honoring Andy Pettit. I have no problem the Yankees honoring Andy Pettit. I wouldn't expect the Red Sox to honor Andy Pettit. And just like I expect the Red Sox to honor David Ortiz and retire his number and put him in the Red Sox Hall of Fame. All that crap. Fantastic. Just like we did for Andy Pettit and any of our other steroid users. But let's not honor each other's steroid users, please.
It's Roger. He's in the box. He's not going. He's in George's box.
Susan, I got to mention Susan this week. I was listening to the game on Wednesday on the way home from work. It was the rain delay games. And Susan loves her weather app that tells her how long the rain delays are going to be. It's 12 minutes. John, it says it's going to be 12 minutes and then the rain is going to stop. 45 minutes later, still raining. I guess my weather app was wrong. I don't know how my weather app could be wrong. I looked at what the weather app she's using. It's like a $5 weather app. Hilarious. But you read my Twitter timeline for play-by-play of Susan's rain delay updates. It's
and
gold,
speaking of
Jerry,
the
gold.
Speaking of the dynamic duo, Sterling was especially bad on, I think, Saturday.
I was listening as well. Could not remember any names.
I was watching, and then I was doing some work in the yard and doing watching, and holy cow. I mean,
he
just
called Xander Bogaerts' home run Hanley Ramirez.
Hanley
which
Ramirez.
I guess PTSD from Hanley Ramirez crushing the Yankees all series.
Yeah.
And then he kept saying Romine.
But
Sanchez
he didn't catch it until the next inning.
Right. Yeah. I even tweeted because I was kind of half listening. I was at the beach. I was kind of half listening. So I tweeted, like, oh, Hanley Ramirez murdering the Yankees again. And then someone replied.
And then you're getting ripped because you're tweeting.
Someone
the wrong
replied,
thing.
What the hell are you talking about? And then the next inning, Sterling's like, oh, I made a huge mistake. I'm like, God damn it, Sterling.
You're making me look bad on Twitter now, Sterling.
It's
now
it's
affecting
things,
me.
It's one of those things you have to be watching the game on game day, you know, the game day app or something when you're listening because he's wrong 25% of the time. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, the amount of times that Romine was the Sanchez was catching even when in fact it was Romine. I mean, it was 5 or 6 times. It was bad. It's getting bad. And I'm an apologist. I love them. But, you know, there's a time and there's a point where it's getting too bad where you can't make that many mistakes that it's taking away from the broadcast. And it's starting to get to that point.
I agree. And it's getting late in the season, just like Betances. He's probably a little gassed.
Yeah.
Maybe we need to send some PEDs his way.
I mean, why not?
Just meaning caffeine.
Why not? We saw him. He needs some food.
He looked
too.
Frail. We saw him down in spring training. He looked frail. All right. Thanks everyone who submitted mailbag questions, and let's end the show with a little NFL talk. Also, I want to shout out our fantasy football league. We mentioned it last week, but there are 10 players other than us in the league: Joseph, CJ, Brandon, Eddie, Julio, Donald, David, John, Christian, and Devin. Are all in the league. I'm in an epic battle with Joe's McFly Joseph right now. I have not checked it since we started recording, but he just got a return touchdown out of his defense, which is always fun when you're going up in fantasy.
I took out John last week in epic fashion. John, I'm sorry I had to do that to you, but it had to be done. And then this week, whew, it's getting bad again. It's Julio. I'm up by 50-plus points. I mean, I'm pretty much just rolling through this league so far. Someone's got to come at me. Come at me, bro.
Come stop me. Any week two NFL thoughts? Your Jets pulled out one against the newly fat Rex Ryan. You see, he got his lap band removed so he could eat a bunch of wings with his brother.
Did he get it removed or did it pop?
No, he got it. Was it
surgically removed?
He got it removed.
Yeah, well, his brother is there, so his brother is eating for the both of
Bills
them.
Bills are 0-2.
Yeah,
how is his brother still employed in the league? Every defense he goes to sucks.
It's been terrible. Yeah, and how does Greg Roman get fired and his brother stays on the staff? It's embarrassing.
The Bills are 0-2. Everyone's saying that Rex Ryan is going to be first coach to get fired. You know how teams like coaches will bury footballs to like motivate their offense or motivate their team? They should bury Rex Ryan's lap band.
Oh boy! It was a good win. I mean, the fact of the matter is that they should have won by a lot more, and they let the Bulls back in the game. They let the Bills back in the game, and they should have won by a lot more. But they came back and they played well. I think Fitzgerald. That was a big game for Fitzgerald because he was going back to Buffalo to win a game.
Fitzpatrick.
What did I say?
Fitzgerald.
Fitzpatrick. I was going to say Baltimore, too. I think I'm having a seizure right now.
Jesus Christ.
It was so long ago. It was a hell of a game, though. And Forte is the guy that I thought he was going to be. I mean, this is a dude that still has, I'd say another year after this. He still looks like the same guy to me in Chicago that he was, where he can run between the tackles and he can catch. And everybody was like, oh, why are you bringing in another guy that's a clone of Bilal Powell? He's not a clone of Bilal Powell. Bilal Powell cannot run between the tackles. Forte can. He glides. He's like Arian Foster in the way that they kind of glide between the tackles. It's impressive the way that they work.
The Jets
and he
do
can catch the ball out of the
backfield. The Jets are looking like they have a legit offense. And Brandon Marshall, I thought his season was over when he went down with that knee injury.
So did I. I did too.
But he seemed to be healthy somehow, running around like nothing happened. I don't understand how players can go down with those type of knee. Like, how does a knee bend like that and you're able to get up and walk? It baffles my mind.
Well, and the fact that he, like, you go down and he's there's so much just everybody thinks he's done. It's amazing how they can come right back, but I guess they just take it as the worst possible thing from the beginning.
Yeah.
And then they go back and they test it and they're like, okay, it's fine.
Well, that's also one of those things that probably hurts way worse the next day.
Yeah, that's true.
But the Jets are looking like they have a legit offense. Revis is looking a little ancient, but.
Yeah, he was looking old. I need to see a couple more. I mean, I understand that he got burned by AJ Green. He's a good receiver. Look, Revis is not the same guy he was a couple years ago. There's just no question about it.
But he got burned by a guy who is not really a football player. He's just an Olympic track athlete.
Okay, exactly.
No, you just shouldn't get burned. No, you shouldn't get burned by a guy like that.
It was a fly route by AJ Green, but you shouldn't get burned by a guy
who's not really a football player.
It was a fly route. The dude just sprinted. I think that Revis was thinking in his brain is that Tyrod Taylor's not going to put the ball there. He's not going to overthrow me. That's what I think he thought. I think he was more on the quarterback than the guy with the speed. And the fact of the matter of the ball actually did get there, and the kid does have world-class speed. So, you know, the rest is history. But
should be a good AFC East between the Jets and the Patriots. It looks like the Dolphins are choking dogs, and same with the Bills.
Dolphins are a bunch of pieces. They suck. I mean, they really do. I mean, you spend all that money, you do all those things on your defense, and then Jimmy freaking Garoppolo, whatever the...
He went down with a shoulder injury. He got him up 21-0.
And then the third-round rookie from where? Louisville? Is that where he's from?
Yeah, Jacoby Brissett.
Yeah, I mean, come on. It's just... I hate the Patriots so much because they just insert said white guy, insert said quarterback, and it doesn't matter.
They have an epic.
The guy's got to be a white guy. He's got to be a white guy in the slot.
They have an outside white receiver, Hogan. I mean, they just have an all pro white receiver, like an all time white offense. It's unbelievable.
Bill Belichick gets more out of white receivers than any coach ever all time. No doubt about it.
I think we said last week he grows them on trees out back.
I think they're all related. They're all related somewhere.
Insert Edelman. Insert Amendola. Insert Hogan. It's just a
and before that, Welker. Yeah. And a lot of them are Miami defuncts. Welker was a defunct. Hogan was Miami.
Welker was in the stands at Gillette today wearing the Brady mask.
That's pretty funny.
The dude is so concussed and so hopped up on ecstasy.
Okay. The Patriots are frustrating for anybody who doesn't like the Patriots. Yes, because it just doesn't stop. The
I
machine.
Can see that. And Giants got a good win too. Ugly win, but they got the W.
They played defense against Breezy and Breeze didn't do anything.
Somehow a defensive struggle. Do you remember that game last year between the two teams?
They set touchdowns. Records. Yeah, I think Breeze threw 7 touchdowns.
Yeah. All right, so a lot of frustration out of Yankees this week. Are you officially calling them dead in the playoffs?
No, I'm not. I told you this. We've already gone over this.
Unreal. Yeah, I wanted to get your final thoughts after we talked about it all.
You just never know. You never know. And that's what I'm hanging my hat on. Am I going to watch it like they're going to win? No, I'm going to say anything. If they win, if they do this, I wouldn't put it past them because they've done it before. They had a 7-game win streak. Now they've lost 6-7. Let's see what can happen against who we got. Tampa Bay coming up, and there's still a good amount of games against the division coming up.
Well, the
still
fact that
amount of good games.
Castro and Ellsbury might be done for the season doesn't really
help. That
could
be a big deal. No, that's a big. Those guys are injured. Not that Ellsbury has been. I mean, he's been a lot better in the last month. And Castro in the second half of the season, second half Starlin is phenomenal. I mean, this guy is amazing. He's a phenomenal baseball player. First half Starlin needs to work on his game.
Well, so you're taking your cleanup hitter and your number two hitter out of the lineup potentially for the rest of the year.
No, that's a big deal. So if those guys can't play and they can't come back, I don't see any realistic opportunity for them to win up. But they have to put a huge winning streak together. I don't think they're doing it without those guys. There's no doubt.
All right, good stuff. We'll talk to you guys next week. Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.